Before we begin, I mentioned it on the Facebook event, and it's also at the bottom of the source sheet. The shir is being dedicated to Ilui Nishmas, my grandfather, my father's mother, Alav Shalom, Gavriel Ben Ephraim. In many ways, almost in all ways, exactly the person that I hope to become. And I'm working on becoming. He's someone who escaped the Holocaust, moved to America, to a secular community, but there was a Jewish community, and made sure that not only his family would get a Jewish education, but that any other family around would. So he taught on Shabbos afternoons, just because he wanted to. He wasn't a teacher by trade. He worked in the laundry supplies business, I think. I didn't know that until later on. He taught many different kids in the community who didn't go to Jewish schools, didn't have religious backgrounds. He taught bar mitzvah lessons. He was the chazan in the shul for 40 years, something like that. The Bal Kore as well. He was extremely careful about halacha, extremely passionate about his observance. He was always saying Tehillim. He would always end phone conversations early because there was davening coming up in the vicinity of an hour that he had to make sure to be on time for. I'm not joking. He didn't do it with bringing any honor to himself. He didn't do it with any fanfare. He didn't really do all of that stuff to his own benefit. He just did it because it was the right thing. Much of what I do, I feel like I'm trying to extend what he left behind for me to do, and I hope that I'm doing something close to that. So this year should be Le'ilui Nishmat, him, my opa. His yahrzeit is tonight, right now as we speak. It is also Lirafuat Amir Eliyahu Ben Rachel, who just got sick last week with something serious, and a young man my age, hoping that everything turns out okay. And also to Rav Yaakov Yosef Ben Chana Rezel, who's Rav Zinger. He's the Rav of Givat Shmuel, very old, and not doing well right now, and a huge tzaddik and a huge Talmud Chacham. He should also have Refuah Shlema. Okay, this year, I'm very excited to be choosing to look at the Parsha in a different way each year. That it is the third round that I'm giving Shirim each week here at Bar-Ilan University. It's a very big privilege for me to do that. And I try and look at the Parsha and the different things that occur throughout the year with a different perspective every year. Until now, I've kind of taken my own jab at it each time without necessarily having a theme involved, besides the fact that I wanted to make it practical and easy to understand. This year I wanted to specifically look in the world of Hasidus, of Hasidic literature, in terms of the Parsha, in terms of the seasons, the holidays, and current events, and see the deeper side, the Kabbalistic side, of literally our lives, but through the stories that come out in the Parsha. So this year, while it very much, as you'll see, is connected to the Parsha that we're reading this week, it's kind of also a good introduction to the concept of Hasidic literature and the way Hasidus looks at the Torah and looks at our lives. So until now, whenever I get to Lech Lecha, I'm really excited. My Hebrew name is Avram Aryeh. I feel very connected to Avram Avinu, because I can say that, because I guess my name is Avram. But that's obviously the person in the spotlight, and I always like, and I also have a social work degree, so I think about the psychological side of things and the person, the human being that he was, and I typically shift all my focus to that when it comes to these parshios, the human side and the person side. And here is a story that we're going to talk about in this year that I tend, and maybe others would agree with me, I tend to overlook because I don't fully understand what it's doing in the Parsha. I don't fully understand what the intended message is, and it doesn't necessarily speak much, and maybe it speaks even negatively about the man who was Avram Avinu. And it's actually the second story in the Parsha, right after the opening story of Avram, of Lech Lecha, where he's commanded by God to leave his heritage behind, to leave his family behind, and to move to a place that he doesn't even know where it's going to be yet. He finally settles. Hashem finally shows him where to go. He settles down. What's the very next story? Does anyone even know offhand without looking? If you looked, I'll let you answer also. What? There was a famine, which is... We talked about how Bar Ilan is a good mashal for our relationship with God. God tells Avram to move to Israel. It'll be great. V'heyei bracha. Finally puts his suitcases down, and there's no food. Right? And God's like, wait, where's the v'heyei bracha part? Where's all the blessings, and I'm going to be great and wealthy and famous? And now I don't have anything to eat, and I have to leave Eretz Yisrael, the place that I just traveled and left everything behind to go to. And what happens, this is the very first source on the page, Vayira Ba'aretz Vayerad Avram Mitzrayim. He went to Egypt, Lagur Sham. I don't even want to talk about the connections between this and a later time where a Jew or Jews descend to Egypt and the similarities of the wordings and all that. Ki Kaved Harav Ba'aretz, the famine was very heavy, but you can all imagine this happens once or twice later in Jewish history. Vayihi Kasher Hikriv Lavo Mitzrayim, as he's getting closer to Mitzrayim, he doesn't yet reach Mitzrayim yet, but he's getting closer. Vayomer el Sarai Ishto, he says to his wife Sarai, Hine na yadati ki isha yifad mera'at. Now I know, I'm just translating literally, that you are a very pretty, a very beautiful woman in terms of your appearance. V'haya ki yiru oscham hamitzrim, and when the Egyptians see you, v'amru ishto zos, and they'll say, this woman is this man's wife. They're going to kill me, and they're going to leave you alive. It seems to be at the time, there is such a thing in certain cultures back then, that if they saw a pretty woman, they would simply do whatever it took, including murder, to make sure that they had that woman with them. It sounds like there's a number of people involved here. Not the most refined culture. Chivalry was for sure dead back then. Especially, or specifically in Mitzrayim at least. So he was scared for his life because he had a beautiful wife and they would take her away from him, and the only way they could do that is by murdering Avram. So he has a request to Sarai. Imri na achosi at. Tell them, please, that you are my sister. Lie to them. Say you're my sister and not my wife. Laman yitav li ba'avarech, so that I will benefit on your behalf. V'chaisa nafshi, and I will survive, I will be allowed to live because of you. Now, it's just a strange occurrence. What, you know, Bereshis, as opposed to other books of the Torah, it's almost like bread and butter. It's almost like every story is knockout. There's something to learn. It's kind of jumping out of the page what's going on, family issues, human issues, challenges in life that you have to overcome, how to believe in God, right? And here's this strange thing where he's going down to Mitzrayim, he's scared that he's going to be murdered for his beautiful wife, and he tells his wife to lie for him so that he won't be killed. What's the message here? What are we learning from this story? Not only that, the story seems to go against the nature of Avram Avinu in both of the stereotypical or the fundamental ways that we understand Avram Avinu as a person. What were the two things that Avram Avinu stood for that we can say? If it was two words, I would say, and maybe you're thinking about it also, Chesed is definitely the first. What's the next one? What? Emet? Well, Yaakov Avinu is more the Titein Emet Liyakov Chesed Avram. What's the other one? What's the first thing he did that no one else did until that time? Emuna. I would say Emuna. Right? He was the first one to have faith in God. He jumped into a fiery furnace before God ever even showed himself to him. That was a big leap of faith. Emunah and Chesed. Now, what's going on here? Here in this story, Avram Avinu, instead of having faith in God that he wouldn't be killed in this situation and believing in doing what's right, not lying, setting a good example for what the right way to act is, he's instead thinking, how do I make sure to avoid a sticky situation? How about I get my wife to lie for me so that, not because of her, she'll be fine, but because I don't want to die. So that seems to demonstrate a lack of emunah. Secondly, chesed. This is a man who always thought of others, always thought of doing what's best for others, never trying to take for his own benefit. And here he's saying, his own words is, do something for me so that you can benefit me, and it has nothing to do with you, but do a chesed for me, which is very strange. He wasn't even letting Hashem, in next week's Parsha, do a chesed for him by visiting him, because he left right in the middle, but here he's asking to take from his own wife. It's just a strange story. Now, I'm not necessarily going to address each question methodologically and try and find answers to them, but the overall point that we're going to try and figure out is, what is the deeper message here? What is this story trying to... What's jumping out of this story that's trying to tell us and guide us in terms of our avodas Hashem, in terms of serving God? What are we supposed to learn from Avraham Avinu? As you may know, one of the most famous teachings, really in all of rabbinic literature, I believe comes from this week's Parsha in the Ramban, Nachmanides. He says, four words, Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. That's this week's Parsha in the Ramban. That every story, every incident, every single one that we're learning about in these Parshiot is some sort of message contained in it, some sort of moral that we're supposed to learn in order for us to improve or to have guidance in how to live our lives. But he goes a step further and says, not only is it simply a message that we're supposed to read as if they're writing us a letter of how to act, but it's implanting or genetically, well, I don't know the word, anyone a bio major here, biotech, someone? It's infusing us, I'll use that word, with the koach, with the power through their ability to survive these challenges and do whatever it is they were able to do in their lives. It gives us, being their biological descendants, the power to do those same things when we encounter similar issues in our lives. Now, the world of Hasidus would say, not only is it Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim, the message is there, and not only do we have the koach, the genetical makeup to survive these challenges the way they did, but the very same stories that happened to them, the very same incidents, maybe not that we're actually in a famine in Israel and have to go down to Mitzrayim, but the elements of those stories happen over and over again to every generation, to every Jew in their life, on a personal, on a communal, and a national level. We literally live Avram's life in a certain way, and therefore, it's not just that we have to learn from his actions, it's that we literally have to emulate him when we face the same encounter that he faced. And the question is, how exactly does this work? Now, I quoted in source number 2 a Zohar that I don't want to go into, partially because I am not going to stand here and claim that I understand fully what the Zohar is saying. But it's important to know, because this is the basis by which the ideas that are collected here are based on. And he's talking about this pasuk, Zohar, in source number 2, and he says, oh, what happened to the underline? I thought I underlined it. That basically, it's the third line. I'm going to just skip to the one line that I want to point out. The last word on the second line, what is Avram doing? Lavo Mitzrayima la'ashkecha be'enun dargin. He has to descend. This next stage in his life is a period where he has to spiritually descend to the depths of impurity and whatever the opposite of spirituality is, not secular, but immorality, to the depths of the spiritual state of Mitzrayim. And the word Mitzrayim, Mitzarim, is boundaries, is restriction. And at the same time, l'israchka minahon me'ovdei Mitzrayim. And while he's there, he needs to figure out a way to distance himself from those people, from the surroundings, from the negative influences that exist in Mitzrayim. So this symbolizes a period in his life, in Avram's life. And maybe it's not a coincidence that it's right after he goes on a spiritual ascent. He makes Aliyah, literally, the first Oleh, goes to Israel. Right then, he experiences this Yirida, this need to go down into something impure, to something very spiritually dangerous. And his challenge is, how do I distance myself from the negativity there? How do I survive in that environment and retain my high spiritual state, my spiritual purity? And the Zohar explains that the line, Imri Achoti At, is like the saying, the phrase in Mishlei, this is the last line in Zohar, Kema da'as amar, like it says in Mishlei, Emor l'chachma achotiat. There's a pasuk in Mishlei, it says, say to wisdom, you are my sister. And maybe we can be a little Hasidic together to understand that what he's saying is, and on one level he's talking to his wife, but on another level he's thinking, I need to hold on to Chachma and call Chachma wisdom, the knowledge of God and the connection to God, my sister. I need to keep it close like someone would love their own sister. So that's the most basic understanding, just a peek into what it means to look at a story a different way. To see this not necessarily as the actual scenario unfolding in his practical life, but as a spiritual test that he is going through that we all will experience at some point. And I would even add specifically, often right after we go on a high, there's the roller coaster effect where we go all the way down and have to figure out the corkscrews and all those different turns. And that's what he's going through right now. And that element is something that we all experience just like Avram Avinu. And therefore, the question we need to figure out is what message, what guidance are we going to derive from this story? So let's look at the father of Chassidus, the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. Now, the Baal Shem Tov never published any Svarim of his own, but he had several disciples, several students that published Svarim of their own under their names, but it was well known that their Torah, their teachings, were simply a way of spreading the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov. So one such Sefer is called the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. He was a direct student of the Baal Shem Tov from Poland in the late 1700s. And basically all of his Torah is a way of spreading the original teachings of Chassidus coming from the Baal Shem Tov himself. So he dissects this story in a very interesting way, which is the next step in us understanding what we could possibly be learning here. It says, this is source number three, Vayal Avram Mitzrayim. Ulahavin Zeh, to understand this, Nira Lomar de Kasha, you have to first understand that this is a difficult story on a superficial level, at face value. Dimisare Lama Yarad Lemitzrayim below Rishus. He's bothered by the fact that Avram decides that he decides by himself that he's allowed to leave Israel, to go to Mitzrayim because there's a famine. God commanded him to go to Israel. Who said he's allowed to leave? It's a good question. How did Avram know that he's allowed to leave? And that bothers him, and he doesn't have an answer to that question in this parish. And understand, and he says that this is a central foundation, a root, a shoresh, in terms of service of God, in terms of being a servant of God. V'sodo yadua, and the secret is known. Ki hu da'ayel v'nafe, ki adam mitzad kalaluso mito v'ra, I efshar sheyatamid b'madrega achas. It's impossible for a man, for a person, man or woman, going through their life, spiritually speaking, to remain on one level. There's constant movement. Afilu hakadoshim aretz, even the most holy Jews in the land, there's always fluctuation. Ki lefamim ola v'lefamim yored. Gam mitzad shenikra olam katan, u'kamo shelamala yesh katanus v'gadlus kenoda kach ba'adam, tzarech sheyubo madregos elu. Fine. So there's a parallel between the higher worlds where there's smallness and largeness, and so too in our spiritual lives. There are times where we're small, there are times where we're big. The thing that I love to teach people when I talk about this idea of how there are always ups and downs is our pulse. What does the EKG machine look like when we're alive? Ups and downs, ups and downs. What does it look like when we're not alive? A nice, beautiful, calm, serene line. Which is what we're striving for in our life, right? If only for 5 minutes I could just sit down and do nothing. It's a beautiful blessing that I have in my life every once in a while when I get to do that. It doesn't happen often. And yet, the truth is, the reality is, what we should be doing in our life is going through all these ups and downs. So this is the foundation of this story. The fact that there are ups and downs in life. How does that connect? Avram Avinu just went on an aliyah. Stepped off the plane, Israeli flags, Shmorna Aleinu, or whatever old Israeli song, playing in the background. Tzipi Livni gives him a handshake. She was the one at my Nefesh B'Nefesh party, right? Suddenly, famine, we don't get anything, Misrata Panim, everything falls apart, you're missing an envelope with your name on it, and now you have to go to the other side of the country. Vayihi Rav Baretz. Ups and downs. Literally within hours, days. And here he says, the underlines in the middle of the paragraph, Kodam Sheyarad Mitzrayim, before he knew, he anticipated that this Yerida that was going to happen, before going down to Mitzrayim, Shehu Yerida Mimadregaso, Shehaya Batchila, and what that means is, in a spiritual level, descending from the spiritual state he was in beforehand, Tzarech Lekasher Atzmo Tchila B'dveikas Hashem Yisparach, you need to prepare yourself for going into that challenging environment by connecting yourself to Hashem the best way you can. So that when even it ends up happening that you have to go down there, you have some armor, you have some protection. Kach Shorish Yisrael, after the three dots, a line later, Kach Shorish Yisrael, Heim Yaakov, Chevel Nachlaso, he gives a mashal that I skipped of a guy having to go down into the depths, he has to tie, like, into a well to get something that he dropped or to save someone who's lost. He has to tie a rope down so he could be pulled out. That's the type of thing that we need to do when we prepare to go down. We need to tie a rope to Hashem, so to speak, so we could get pulled out. Lechozbo bechebel zeh hakasher bo yisbarach lalosbo, to hold on to that rope so that we could pull ourselves back up. Zeu sod ayel v'nafik, right, going and coming back, ups and downs. Zeu kavanas Avram Avinu. Okay, and here's his perish. V'zeu she'amar ka'asher hikriv lavo Mitzrayim. When he gets close to Mitzrayim, as the Pasuk says, and he quotes the Zohar, la'ashkecha be'inun dargin, shelo yisha'er chas v'shalom, so that he doesn't stay at that low level of Mitzrayim, that he's able to pull himself back out. Rak she'yizke la'alos misham, so that he'll be zocha to ascend back from there. V'yisrachak, to be able to understand what in my life is challenging, what is dangerous, and stay away from it, to know that's bad and that's good. He prepared himself before going down to Mitzrayim by connecting himself to Hashem, so that when he would go down to Mitzrayim, he would not need to fear, he would not need to worry, because he retained that connection to God himself. Shehu reishis chachma yiras Hashem, and that's going back to the pasuk that the Zohar quoted, of emor lechachma achosiyat. Connect yourself to wisdom, reishis chachma yiras Hashem, to be fearful of God, to connect yourself to God and His ways. V'zeo shamar imri na achosiyat, kemo emor lechachma achosiyat. Say, just like Avram says to his wife, call me your sister, it's as if we're saying to Chachma, call me your sister, be my sister, be close to me. And he explains, Bidveka kemo achva achos, a closeness, a connection like a brother and sister. Kenonda Bazar, as the Zohar says, Debein ish v'ishto yachol liparid al yedei get, that a husband and wife's relationship can be separated, terminated through a divorce, masha ein kein v'achva achos, unlike the relationship between a husband, brother and sister. Adka. So here we see the really like the blueprint of what it means to dissect a story in the Torah, in the Parsha, using Chassidus. This is the source. We look at a story, we say there's no way this is only existing on face value, that there's a challenge and that they have to get through the challenge, but that this represents a spiritual struggle that not only Avram goes through, but we go through all the time, where we have an Aliyah and we have Yerida, we have the EKG machine, ups and downs, and we have to figure out when we notice that we're maybe headed for a downhill, to prepare for it, to do proper preparation, to connect ourselves to Hashem in whatever way we can, so that when we're down there, we're not lost, and we have a way of picking ourselves out, like a rope tied to us, that we could pull ourselves back out afterwards. And he says, that's why Avram says, Imri na achosi, call me your sister, not my wife. And this is what we're going to go to next here, to try and understand this idea, that we're calling Chachma, we're calling our Dveikus Vashem, the connection to Hashem, our sister, because unlike a husband and wife who can get a divorce, brothers and sisters can't get a divorce. So what is that last point talking about? It seems like a bit of a stretch. People who are not familiar with Hasidic literature understand that often there are interpretations of psukim that seem maybe like a stretch. That seem like, okay, you're trying to fit in an idea that it doesn't necessarily jump out at me that that's what it is. You have to be a bit more of a chassid to be flexible with these words. But what is it, what are we saying? Avraham Avinu looked at his wife and said, don't be my wife in this situation, be my sister. And again, we're talking about the parallel between this story and our spiritual lives, where we descend into a difficult situation, and the thing that is usually our wife, we're saying, don't be my wife, be my sister. As if to say, our connection to Hashem is usually in the state of a wife and a husband, but we want to switch it now, is everyone following me, to the relationship of a brother and sister. I never knew I was God's sister before. I never knew that was possible, that I could switch that. It's also not so clear that I'm married to Hashem. I thought I was his son, we're his sons and daughters, B'nai Yisrael, right? B'nai B'chor Yisrael. So what's going on here in terms of the switching of these relationships? We saw a little peek from the Zohar that was quoted here, but there's a beautiful source. I heard this source quoted in a shir by Rav Moshe Weinberger, who is the Mashpia in Yeshiva University. He's the Rebbe of a Kehillah in Woodmere in New York, of Esh Kodesh. A beautiful idea that connects this last point to the overall message that we're trying to get here. And it's from the Sefer Beis Yaakov, which is Rav Gershon Chanuch Henech of Radzin. He was a Radziner. He's the grandson of the Ishbitzer Rebbe, the Mea Shiluach. He says the following beautiful idea. He starts by saying, this is in source number 4, Hine kol hasipurim me'avoseinu ha'kadoshim shenimtza b'toras Hashem, gam heim meleim or v'das Torah v'zesha amar Avram l'sara imrina achosi at, zehu tfila shehispalu l'Hashem yisbarach b'yiridasa l'mitzrayim. Makom Torah Hashari Tuma. So he says, the story here is full of light. And what does that mean? When Avraham Avinu says to Sarah, he turns to his wife and says, when we get to them, tell them that you're my sister. Imrina Achosi At. It's a tefillah that Avraham is saying to Hashem. As opposed to only looking at this as a practical message, a way of preparing for the physical danger that lies ahead, it's a tefillah that Avram's saying to Hashem before descending into Mitzrayim. Imri na'achosiyat. So we have to understand, what does this tefillah mean? So go skip to the next column, on the top line of the next column, to the left. V'hispalel az. And what was his tefillah? What is he davening? Shehakdusha shehi bebechinas isha tihiyeh itam bebechinas achoti sheyuchal alze la'amod behester. That was the line to underline, if you're taking notes. What was his tefillah? The kedusha that lies within our relationship to God. When we experience holiness, all it is us connecting to God Himself in some way. That Kedusha, which I would say typically is in the form, says the Beis Yaakov, typically is in the form, takes some sort of form of a husband and wife relationship, should now turn into the form of a sister-brother relationship. And in that way, Avram understood this, in that way he would be able to survive the spiritual challenge of living in darkness, living in concealment, of not being able to see God clearly. Hester. That somehow having a brother-sister relationship would get him through, whereas a husband and wife relationship wouldn't. And here he explains. V'hu ki nimtza shnei minei kedushos. כמו שמצינו שלפנים כסיב אנוכי השם אלוקך אשר הוצא שיחה מארץ מצרים. There are two types of holiness. One is in the Bechina, one is the type of holiness where Hashem is talking to us after he took us out of Mitzrayim, like it says in the Ten Commandments, the first one. But it also says in Sefer Hosea, Oksiv, Va'anochi Hashem Elokecha Mei Eretz Mitzrayim, from within Eretz Mitzrayim. There's the type of Kedusha where we're out of the darkness, where we're in the light, where it's easy to understand. There's the type of Kedusha where we're in darkness, kind of like Lahagid Baboker, Chastecha Ve'munascha V'leilos, right? There's nighttime, there's daytime. Umehakasuv Hasheni Mashma She'od Be'yosam Be'eretz Mitzrayim Arum Ve'eriyam Imasim Tovim Eskashi Hashem Yisbarach HaKadosha Shevaraza De'achos Hu. That the second pasuk of Hashem talking to us from Eretz Mitzrayim is as if he's saying that he is connecting to us through the holiness that is called Achot, sister. Ki Be'emes Nimtza Kedusha Be'kfius Balev Yisrael, and here we're getting to the point that this Kedusha is permanently stamped, it is ingrained in the heart of the Jewish people. Lihitgaber al kol, I don't know what that word is. All of our challenges, to overcome all of our challenges, Sheyavru aleihem, Shelo yetzu chutza miratzon Hashem Yisparach. That somehow the power of the brother-sister relationship is so strong that it could overcome any sort of distance, any sort of struggle, spiritual struggle, unlike that of a husband and a wife. Explaining outside for a second. These two relationships are very different. We understand these relationships differently as human beings. But it's not so clear-cut. It's not easy to rank a relationship as a brother-sister, better or worse. They're just different. They have different qualities. But what's interesting is that because they're different, some things are better and some things are more difficult or more challenging. Some things are stronger, some things are weaker. And I'll explain. And this is what he explains in his parish. We're running out of time and I want to explain the idea clearly. A husband and wife relationship is typically more passionate. It's more intense than a brother-sister. It's something that is seen as a closer connection when it is going well. Right? Would everyone agree with that? It is supposed to be the most intense connection you have to a human being over the course of your lifetime, even more than your parents, as it says, Alken Yazov, right? When the woman should leave her parents' house in order to live with her husband, literally there's a departure from all other relationships, even the closest one that ever existed, parents, and this is the strongest connection. And yet, a husband and wife relationship is based on choice. It doesn't need to be. It exists because the husband and the wife choose to be in that relationship, and they sign a contract saying, we're in a relationship under these terms. And what that means is, as strong as that bond is, practically speaking, as close as they can get, it's just as easy to terminate the relationship as it is to begin, to get into that relationship. When things go great, that relationship is stronger than anything in the world. When things don't go great, though, all you need is to tear up a piece of paper, and that's it. Or to write up a new one, really. A divorce contract, and that's it. You walk your separate ways, it's as easy as that. And what's interesting is something that's so strong is at the same time so weak. What happens with brother and sister? They grow up, brother has to wait for the bathroom for an hour. Sister hates that the guy, his sweatpants are all over the place. They punch each other, kick each other, never get along, bigger piece of cake, I want the car this weekend, all sorts of issues. But at the end of the day, they got each other's back. At the end of the day, you can never divorce yourself from your sister, likewise from your brother. It is something that is permanent. There is something about a family, about siblings, where they can hate each other's guts. Obviously, in childhood, it happens more often that there's more petty arguments. Unfortunately, in adulthood, it could also happen, so shouldn't just say that. They're petty arguments, but everyone knows at the end of the day, I'd do anything for you. I'd watch out. Now, it's not romantic. Ew. It's not passionate. But there's something unspoken there that is stronger than pretty much anything else that exists. And therefore, when there's tough times, siblings tend to forget everything else and stick together. What happens when a husband and wife go through tough times? Hopefully, they survive that too. But the problem is, because the nature of relationship is that they can escape, there is a back door, unfortunately, all too often, and I believe right now in many societies, in many communities, it is more likely that when you start a marriage, you'll end it, right? I believe, statistically speaking. It's so easy to think about, I could just get out of here, this isn't working, why work on it if I could just leave and find something else, that when there's more pressure put on that relationship, it's easier for it to crumble. But what's the better form of a relationship if we're just talking about a relationship in terms of how close two entities get to each other? What's the more intense, the better connection? Husband and wife, but it's weaker, right? And in that sense, we embody, our relationship with Hashem takes on both of those forms, says the Beis Yaakov. When things go well with God, it is as passionate, as amazing as a husband and wife. You may have heard this before, but Har Sinai Matan Torah was considered a wedding between God and Bnei Yisrael. It was literally a chuppah. And we were the bride. We were entering God's world, God's house. We married God, so to speak, and the contract was the Torah. And yet, when things don't go so well, on both ends, God getting really fed up with us, and at times, us getting really fed up or turning away from God, feeling like he's doing more harm to us than good. Not that that's actually the case. It's easy to feel like, just like a husband and wife, well, let's just terminate this relationship. When things are in darkness, when things are concealed, when we're in a place of Mitzrayim, either we just don't feel close. It's not necessarily that something went wrong, just nothing's going right. I don't have that same honeymoon engagement, googly eyes feeling anymore. Maybe I never did. So it's easy to feel like, okay, well, there's nothing lying under this that keeps me connected. We're a husband and wife, so let me just leave this. I'll look for something else. I'll go to India. Maybe there's some cool god over there with like seven arms and an elephant trunk, right? Maybe that's something I could connect to. And it's right then when we find ourselves being Yored LeMitzrayim, going down to Mitzrayim, feeling like, I don't know what's up with this God thing, that we, learning from Avram Avinu, have to say four words. Prepare ourselves for that struggle with four words. Imri na achosiyat. Instead of looking at God only through the prism of husband and wife, which is the ideal form of a relationship with God, where it's passionate, where it's great, where we get through things, don't worry, we're in this together till death do us part. But just in case things go south, just in case you're at the lowest of the low and you're not holding on to anything and you're thinking, wait, let me just get out of this relationship, remember that you're also a brother and a sister. Remember that you don't get out of this relationship because you're connected for life. And when things get tough, and as annoying as the two of you get, and as hard as the relationship seems to be, you work it out, because that's what brothers and sisters do. Now, that's not typically the way we think about a relationship with God, but it is a form of that relationship. It's where, when things get stripped away, when things fall apart, that's what's lying underneath. So hopefully we don't have to think about that form of our relationship with God, but it may come up. And it came up to the best of us, including Avram Avinu, who realized, I'm in love with God. I'm passionately in love with God. But even I know, when I'm going down to Mitzrayim, I need to remember that I'm also a brother and sister with God. And when things begin to fall apart, I'm still going to stay close to Him. That is the idea found in the Beis Yaakov. That is the message that we can learn from this story. And not only that, but the Pasuk in Shir Shirim proves this point. Source number 5, a pasuk that you may have seen before, Basila Gani Achosi Kala. And it actually says this three other times in the psukim right before this pasuk, and it says it again And the very next pasuk, the very next pasuk kind of steals everyone's thunder in Shir HaShirim. Ani yishenav libi er kol dodi dofek. Right, we're Hashem's knocking on the door. My beloved is knocking on the door. My heart is awake. It's on fire. Pischi li, open up the door. What does he say? Achosi, my sister. Rayasi, my friend. Yonasi, my dove. This is someone talking in passionate terms, the relationship between God and of his people, and stuck in there is my sister, which is the least passionate thing for a brother to think about at any point in time. Trust me. And we see from the pasuk right before it, Basi Lagania came to my garden, Achosi Kala, my sister, the bride, my bride. It sounds strange. Now, if it's in a song, or if we're reading it, if we're hearing it on Pesach, it's beautiful. But if we're thinking what we're saying, my sister, my bride? But this is the point. We have this dual relationship with God, and for a reason. We need to utilize those two aspects of our relationship with God in the good times and in the bad. Now, very quickly, because we have negative 2 minutes left. Source 6 and 7 is another way of looking at this story. Another way of looking at the story is, based on a pasuk actually in next week's parsha, when Avimelech, Melch Plishtim, tries to do the same thing, and Avram says, be my sister, and then Avimelech has a dream, and God comes to him and says, you lay a finger on Avram, I'm going to mess you up. And then Avimelech wakes up and goes to Avram, trying to cover his tracks, saying, why'd you go and lie to me and make me think that I was going to take Sarah, your wife? I was never going to do such a thing. Why'd you accuse me, so to speak, of wanting to do that? And Avram explains, I was scared. You were going to take my wife. And he says, when I was taken from my father's house, I should say that I'm her brother. Wherever I go to a place where I'm looking, where I'm begging for someone to do kindness, but I'm scared it might not happen, I'm surrounded by other people, I should say I'm her brother. Now, the Divrei Bina, who is the Biala Rebbe, the previous Biala Rebbe, explains that this isn't just talking about Avram and Sarah, but it's talking about a Jew and his fellow Jew. That the way to get out of a sticky situation, the way to survive in Gullus, is to say, Imili Achihu. If he's a Jew, he's my brother. Stick together. A very relevant message found in the very same type of words here. When we say Imri Na Achosiyat, we're not just talking about our relationship with Hashem, but we're talking about our relationship with our fellow Jew. When we're stuck in Gullus, when we have very little to survive with and to hold on to, we have to think of ourselves as brothers and sisters, or we fall apart completely. Not just personally between us and God, but between us and the rest of the Jewish people. And what's interesting is, and to conclude, these two ideas aren't necessarily so separate. Perhaps they're one and the same. One of the most beautiful ideas, I think, I mean, it's so simple, is we just celebrated a couple weeks ago the holiday, the ambiguous holiday of Shmini Atzeres, the ultimate third wheel holiday. Shmini Atzeres is the day after Sukkot. Most people don't even realize that it's its own holiday because it's the day after a holiday. But it was a holiday from the Torah, a biblical holiday commanded by God in a way of saying, stay with me for one more day. In the rabbinic literature, there's a phrase that they use to try and help us understand God's feeling, so to speak, when he commands us to have Shmini Atzeres after we did Rosh Hashanah for 2 days, Atzeres Yimei Tshuva, the 10 days of doing Tshuva, getting to Yom Kippur fasting, 5 days of getting ready for Sukkot, 7 days of Sukkot, and then everything just goes back to, okay, I need to register for classes, and then 6 months of cold. And Hashem's like, one more day. And Chazal say, what Hashem is saying, Kavi Yochel, is Kasha Elai Predaschem. Have you heard of this phrase? Our separation is difficult. It's difficult for me to see you go. One more day, a goodbye party. So we won't shake Lulav and Esrog, we won't blow the shofar anymore. Let's just hang out. Let's have coffee together. Let's have a meal. It was so nice what we did. It was such a beautiful relationship. And if you do it right, and if you invest the time, and I'm sure you may have seen it, in someone else's life, or if you've done it yourself, if you've done the process of Elul all the way through the end of Sukkot, there's really very little else that compares to the amount that you've invested in that amount of time in Hashem, in a relationship. Long shofar every day, Hashem Ori, doing Rosh Hashanah, then fasting. It doesn't seem like a typical passionate relationship where you're blowing a ram's horn and then you're not eating for a day and then you're sitting in a hut and shaking vegetation around. It's not like typical date night. But there's a lot going on, and if you're the guy in the family, then you're the one getting the Lulav and Esrog, and you're the one building the sukkah, and you're the one that has to fast. You're the one blowing the shofar, or hearing the shofar, making sure to go in and out of shul. And then there's this one last day, Kashay Life, Reid Askim. It's hard to go. Now, Sifrei Chassidus say that it's not just talking about a relationship with God, but it's talking about the relationship with the Jewish people. There's such achdus, and I gave my Shabbos Shuva Drasha this year, and Givat Shmuel was talking about the theme of Achdus and Yom Kippur that extends to Sukkot also. V'yasu kulam aguda achas, that's where we bring Lulav and Esrog together. That it's so hard to see the Jewish people who are so close, davening, singing, dancing, and then go about their separate ways and start honking at each other in traffic. And, hey, what are you doing? Right, we're back to normal. Kashe Leiprit asked them. The message is found in the very same phrase, our connection to God and our connection between the fellow Jews. And to finish, the Sefer Choves HaTalmidim, the Pius Netzer Rav, Rav Clonimus Kalman Shapiro, writes in a Sefer, I didn't include it in these sources because it was after I printed them, a beautiful, beautiful line. And this should hopefully bring together all that we're trying to say. And I'll translate slowly. Uva midasha titchabru yachad ze el ze ve'ahava. And in the same degree that you, the Jewish people, connect to each other with love, v'titzamadna nafsho seichem liyos achad mamash. And you bring your souls closer together, you connect yourselves to be one, to be literally like one entity. B'midazo gam Hashem. And in the same degree that you do that, so too Hashem, Elecha Yischaber, will connect to you individually as a person, liyosachan mamash, to be one with you. The same degree that you are connecting yourselves to the Jewish people around you, to your friends, to your family, to strangers, it is that exact degree that Hashem will connect Himself to you, Hashem being the active one in that. And that's what we're saying here. You want to go, you have to go to a dark place, you feel yourself slipping, you have a tefillah right here that your Zayda Avraham said. Imrina Chosiyat. Treat Hashem like your sister. We're going to get through this because we don't separate. We're biologically connected. There is no divorce for a brother and a sister. And at the same time, a way to survive a gullus, look at any stranger around you. Look at everyone around you. They're your brother and your sister too. They're the ones that get you through this. They're the ones that pull you out of darkness. And like we just said, the message is one and the same. Kashe lai preid aschem. The way that we find it hard that Hashem finds it hard for us to separate from Him is the same way He finds it hard when we're not together as Jewish people, and in the same way we connect to our fellow Jew is the way that Hashem will connect to us. Hopefully, the message found here of Imrina Chosiyat will connect us in a very difficult time that we're in Israel, both in terms of our national security, a time of extreme darkness, it pains me to look at Facebook and Twitter. It pains me to read anything, just how backwards and how the world is okay with it. It's so clear to me that if the world is okay with it, then it must be that Hashem's making sure that people are not seeing the truth. And if it's such extreme, thick darkness, then this message could not be more relevant to us as individuals, us as a group. The beginning of the year also is a time where it's exciting and you're moving in and you're starting, and it's also, you run into all the obstacles where you think everything's going smoothly, then sometimes in Bar Ilan it doesn't go smoothly. Or in other things too, in Aliyah, in many other aspects of our life. And it's important to hold on to this message, to know Hashem is still there, Hashem is our sister at times, even when things fall apart. And we have brothers and sisters here, even when things fall apart, and hopefully we'll be mischazek, we'll strengthen ourselves, we'll strengthen each other, and may we see the end of darkness. and the full Geula with the coming of Mashiach. May her be.